Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm the site's managing editor, Matt Goldberg, and with me today is senior editor Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
With the Toronto International Film Festival close at hand, we wanted to talk about the upcoming festival. With About TIFF, we've been in past years. We are excited to go back, and we know the films that will be there. And what we wanted to do in this episode is paint you a picture of what TIFF is like, how it's different from other film festivals. We wanted to go into how it plays into the awards game, what films are already kind of looking like they have a head start due to their earlier premieres at other film festivals or just the general buzz, and then we're going to go into specifics of what we're looking forward to. But to start off with TIFF as a festival, something about it that's very different from Sundance is Sundance, I believe, has its own flavor in a way that I think is kind of a little more rambunctious and fun. Adam, you may disagree, but I like the snow. I mean, it's kind of like, oh yeah, it's snowy and we're all huddled around heat lamps and we're all kind of like trying to stay warm, but I don't know, I like that a little more. TIFF is a little, Toronto's a beautiful city and it's very easy to get around because it has a good transport system that the movie theaters are based around. It's really not difficult to get to any of the public theaters, and the transit system isn't super expensive. The tokens are super tiny. That's the only thing that concerns me about the Toronto public transit system. But I think it's a very well-run festival, but it's sort of something where it's very smooth, and yet I'm not sure how I would define its personality other than terms of being there. Like, it's very well run and it's where awards film movies go, but in terms of a texture, I don't feel like it has as much as Sundance. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd say Sundance is more of an intimate film festival. It's smaller. I'd say the main difference is Sundance is a festival of discovery. You don't know anything about 99% of the movies that you're seeing there. You most of the time haven't even read a log line. You don't know. These are movies you haven't seen trailers, you haven't seen pictures, and a lot of them are first-time filmmakers, so you're rolling the dice on a lot of them, and so it's kind of that era of adventureness, and the cold in the mountains brings that to it, which is a lot of fun. It feels like a more buzzy atmosphere because you, by like the second and third days, you're talking to people in line, and you're like, oh my god, you have to go see this movie, it's this, and no one had ever heard of it before. Like, oh my god, you have to go see Beasts of the Southern Wild, it's this amazing movie that is here and everyone should see it. Whereas TIFF, I feel, is more a film festival of discovery, because most of the films at TIFF you've heard of, some of them have screened before.
It's like a film of judgment.
Yeah,
like
a lot
know
of
what
them
they are, but now it's time to see the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, you've seen trailers, you have expectations. It's also in a big city. It's not as tight-knit. It's still a lot of fun. It's just a completely different flavor. I think they both have their merits, and I like them both because they're both so different from each other. It doesn't feel like, oh, I'm going to the same thing again in September.
Right. No, it's definitely, and I like that it's different flavors. Park City is transformed by Sundance. It is a ski town where everything must now function as a movie theater. And it's great. Like, the school library is one of the biggest theater venues at TIFF. And the air conditioning is very weird, and the seats are very close together. And when you're in it, it's kind of annoying, and yet it still has its charm. TIFF is different, especially as a member of the press. When you are at Sundance, there is a press tent, and yet you kind of, if you want to get a first look at a film, you have to go to the public screening. They usually do public screenings before press screenings. And so while you can have a singular location, I find at Sundance, I'm going to a lot of different locations, whereas at TIFF, I'm mostly at the Scotiabank Theater. That is like the big press theater. It's super nice. I love it. But it's all in really one location. And the public screenings are still places worth going. And those theaters are magnificent. Like, they are legit theaters that are also used for stage plays and big productions. So if you go to like the Princess of Wales Theater, it's gorgeous. So it's definitely something where you get the big city vibe. And that lends its own air to it.
Yeah, last year was my first year at TIFF, so I actually haven't been to screenings at anywhere besides the Scotiabank Theatre, which is essentially just, it's just a multiplex, but that's where they have all of the press screenings. So it's a big, it's a Toronto multiplex, as opposed to the some of the press screenings in Sundance are in a movie theater, but it's like a six screen theater in Park City, Utah. So it's not this big gigantic place. So yeah, so I mean, I enjoy that aspect of TIFF because it's in a very nice multiplex and it's all self-contained. So like, if you're going from one movie to another, you're not going across town normally. You're not going across town. You're not having to go a long way. You just step out of one theater and go and get in line for one right down the hall.
And usually you can get in. In fact, last year was the first year I had never been able to get into a movie. What happened was is Adam and I went to go see Dallas Buyers Club, and then we're like, we got to go see Gravity. And so the moment Dallas Buyers Club ends, we bolt out of the theater and we get there. And like, the line for Gravity is already nuts. And yet we almost got in.
Yeah.
We were like 20 people away
from
getting in. And actually that worked out kind of better, inadvertently worked out better for us, because later that day we got an email saying that another screening of Gravity had been scheduled for the next day, and that one would be in IMAX 3D as opposed to RPX 3D. And we're like, yeah, we won somehow.
Yeah, but,
and that's important at TIFF, because something else about TIFF is TIFF doesn't do a lot of multiple screenings. There was going to be another screening of Gravity later in the festival, but for the most part, it's a very front-loaded film festival. I remember a couple years ago, there was only one press screening of The Place Beyond the Pines, and I didn't have time to get into it, and thankfully I was able to get a ticket to the public screening, and that was great, and that was one of the best films I saw that year. And it's something where if we were at Sundance, you would have maybe 3-4 chances to go see it. They would maybe even add screenings so you could go see it. It's definitely something where, going back to what you said, Adam, about these first-time filmmakers and a festival of discovery, they want more discovery, especially if distributors are trying to figure out like what time to gauge its temperature and how many people want to see this and really start building buzz. Whereas TIFF, it's sort of like, how many times do we need to show Foxcatcher? Because we kind of got it in the bag.
Yeah,
like, it's a good place to start building buzz for Foxcatcher, but we don't need to show it to you 4 times.
Yeah, Sundance is a big acquisitions festival, which is, you know, a filmmaker made a film independently and it's screening at Sundance in order to be sold. So the Sundance organizers want to screen that movie as many times as possible so it has the highest probability of getting sold. Whereas TIFF definitely has films that are screening there that don't have distribution, but it is also a showcase for awards fair. So films that do have distribution, it's used as a launching pad to kick off the Oscar season, really.
Yeah. Although then again, there are also films that are picked up at TIFF. I believe King's Speech was acquired by Weinstein Company at TIFF. It was a film that at the very least was flying under the radar. No one knew, was still really sure what it was, and that's launched. I mean, TIFF is, and Adam, your awards expertise will can correct me on this. When was the last time a film won Best Picture and didn't play at TIFF?
It has been, so I know like the past 4 or 5 have.
Did Hurt Locker play at TIFF? I don't know if it did.
I'm not sure if Hurt Locker played at TIFF. But 12 Years a Slave did. King's Speech did. Argo did.
Artist.
The Artist did. Slumdog Millionaire did. And then also the also-rans like 127 Hours, Up in the Air, The Descendants. You basically, it is a rarity that the eventual Best Picture winner will not screen at TIFF.
Yeah. And then what's funny though is that it starts becoming a place where, and we'll get a little bit more into the awards season stuff, is stuff can start getting a target painted on its back because the awards season is so behind the scenes vicious. Most people who will turn into the Oscars just won't know. They'll just be like, I heard that 12 Years a Slave might be the front runner, and they have no idea that behind the scenes studios are trying to eviscerate each other in terms of Academy voting and how fucking brutal it is. Like, the movies just kind of almost get lost in the shuffle. And someone has to have their job be like, I have to take down the slavery movie. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it does become a thing of getting a target painted on its back. By the way, you are correct. The Hurt Locker did not screen at TIFF. It screened at Venice. That's where it's...
Woohoo! I'm an expert!
Yes. But Slumdog did. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something. And, of course, I will also say that I think the odds have increased simply because the number of Best Picture nominees have increased. If you had kept it at 5, you have a smaller window. Not to say that a TIFF film, it's still a launching pad no matter what, but like you're saying, it's also, the Best Picture category is also filled with also-rans that can make it a little bit more competitive.
Sure, and the Fall Film Festival circuit has become more integral to the overall awards race since the Oscars were pushed back. So the Oscars used to be, Oscars used to be held in March, and now they're in February. So when the Oscars were held in March, films could debut in December and still have a good lead time in order to get the notice and the recognition needed to win Best Picture. Whereas when they were moved up a month, the whole schedule shifted backwards, which is why we haven't had a Best Picture winner that was released in December since 2004. So now the Oscar season begins in September, as opposed to, you know, tail end of October, November. So movies really need to start getting their gears going. They need to start building buzz by September in order to get... If you haven't screened for anyone by, you know, like mid-November, chances are you're probably not going to win. But there's always the movies that were like, you know, no one's seen American Hustle yet, or no one's seen Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close yet, but those movies... end up, you know, invariably they screen at the beginning of December and they get whatever response, but they just don't have the lead time necessary in order to build that support and build off that campaign.
Yeah, and the more pedigree you have, the later you can sort of get out in the world. So Wolf of Wall Street was so last minute. Wolf of Wall Street was working on things up to the wire, so it missed every festival.
Yeah.
But when you have Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, you're in the conversation no matter what.
Yeah, definitely.
So that
helps. You're not building... People have already picked out their favorites. And that's the thing.
Oh, for sure. Because
people start picking out their favorites early. They see at these festivals and they're like, oh, man, I'm really going to get behind the 12 Years a Slave wagon because I love this film and it's one that I want to champion and one that I want to support and hope it wins. So you might see something that you might have been inclined to love later in December, but you've already, you know, kind of put your chips down on 12 Years a Slave, and that's the one that you really, really want to win. So right. It's tough to kind of, it's that thing of being first. So,
right. I'm sorry. The reason I laughed is I'm imagining a wagon with the words 12 Years a Slave on it, and it's just awful. And someone's, it's like, I gotta hop on that.
Someone probably owns that.
Someone probably owns that wagon.
Yes.
Oh my God. The other thing, one of the many reasons I'm grateful to be able to go to TIFF is that you can see a film, even though there have been trailers, you know the cast and all that stuff, you're still seeing it relatively free of hype. You can go in there. So I saw Spring Breakers at TIFF. That was its debut. And it was amazing to just sort of see it months and months on, where it had taken on this mythical quality for people. Like, people who were seeing it at South by Southwest and are like, oh man, I've heard such crazy things. And to watch that develop, because people, even at TIFF, just didn't know. And people before me, I remember, like, Matt Patches was just sort of going, spring break forever. And so already it's sort of taken on this feverish pitch. And again, no one knew what this was. Like, people like, okay, James Franco's playing this weird character, and as much of actresses are trying to break free of their Disney image, and it's from the guy who directed Gummo. All right, whatever. And then, of course, it just took on this life. By the same token, a film that... I mean, Spring Breakers was never really in the awards race, but you sort of try to see the real deal. And so I would say that something like 12 Years a Slave, because we saw it fairly early in its awards campaign, I think we were able to judge it at least better. However, and I will let you respond in just a moment, because this was something that does happen. It's called festival fever. And that is, you're at a festival and you get kind of wrapped up in it, and you just love something, and then when it gets out into the world, you're sort of confused about why it didn't catch on. And I am speaking specifically of Labor Day. And this has happened with me to other movies as well. You see them early and you get really excited about them. And I'm not saying, like, boo Labor Day now. It's just, to me, it's fascinating. And I then start questioning myself to some extent, because the other thing you have to keep in mind is you're getting up super early, you're seeing about 4 movies a day, and things start to blur together. That's something else to consider. Adam?
It's possible. I don't think that happened to me on Labor Day, because I think there was still a fair amount of mixed response to Labor Day at TIFF. It was just a movie that I really liked when I saw it there. But it does happen. I mean, there is overhype and overzealousness. I remember last year after seeing Gravity, I didn't know how to get across my response without hyping it so high, and that's something that's so tough, because when you see it with no expectations and you haven't read reactions or anything yet, it's so fresh and free, but it's impossible for the rest of the world to see it without seeing those reactions, so it sucks.
Yeah, and that's the thing, it's about setting a tone, and you don't, and I have this problem just on a regular basis in terms of just when the LA and New York press, who I follow on Twitter, their embargo gets lifted, and then they're like just setting the conversation for everyone. And you have to keep in mind, and I think it's always important to keep in mind, if you're following these people, to scale it back. So when all the junket press loves Captain America, the Winter Soldier, like, I ended up thinking it was great too, but Adam, I think on a previous podcast or maybe just in one of our many conversations, you're like, no, we must recalibrate from what is happening. Like, it's one thing for people to lean towards it, but keep shit in check.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that's been happening now is that, so last year we were getting ready to see 12 Years a Slave and Gravity, but both of those movies had already screened at the Telluride Film Festival the week before. So reactions were already starting to get out, and that started a bit of a festival turf war now between Telluride, which is in Colorado, and TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah. Well, Adam, why don't you sort of inform people about the sort of festival circuit, because that's a large part of the awards race, and I think you can speak about it more intelligently than I can in terms of where does Telluride fall, where does Toronto fall, where do these film festivals fall, and what is the arc of movies that play there?
Sure. Well, recently the traditional arc of an awards, a quote-unquote awards movie or an Oscar campaign, was to have a world premiere either at the Venice Film Festival at the very end of August or the Telluride Film Festival also at the very end of August. And Telluride is in Colorado. It is an incredibly small film festival. It makes Sundance look like TIFF. It's very exclusive. No one gets special treatment. If you want to cover it as a press, you have to pay.
And it's very expensive.
Yeah, I think each badge is $750. And so its reputation is kind of tastemakers. It's a very intimate film festival. A lot of filmmakers go just to kind of enjoy it. I know that Werner Herzog goes every single year. Roger Ebert was always a regular there. And so you go, and the thing about Telluride is that they don't unveil their lineup until the day that the festival starts. So it's supposed to be a surprise. And so in past years, a film would screen at Telluride. So one of these is Slumdog Millionaire. It would screen at Telluride. It would get a rapturous response at Telluride. But the amount of people at Telluride was, you know, you have Oscar bloggers, you have a select group of kind of the elite film critics, so you would have like Roger Ebert, and you would have, you know, the big, like 4 or 5 really big film critics there. And so they would get this taste of the movie, and it would start to build a little bit of a buzz. And then a week and a half later is when TIFF starts, and then the movie would play at TIFF, and that's when it would explode. So that was the trajectory, is it would have this 1-2 punch where it would start off at Telluride, it would get a really big response, but it would, you know, it's from the tastemakers, so you've got the elite saying it's really, really good. Then it plays at TIFF, where it's just a crazy amount of media, a crazy amount of journalists, and that's where it explodes. And so at the TIFF, recognition is really what skyrockets it off. So Telluride was kind of giving the film the boost, and then TIFF would skyrocket it off by, you know, it's being, because they have big premieres at TIFF, so it's going to be on Entertainment Tonight, and it's going to be, you know, reported on the news magazines and all that stuff.
They're doing red carpets.
Yeah, red carpets.
People are crowding, like there are lines around the block.
Yeah, so that was traditionally the arc of things, how things would go, and this has worked. This is the exact same arc that Slumdog Millionaire made, that King's Speech made, that Argo made, and that 12 Years a Slave made. They all had small previews at Telluride, premiered it, and then screened at TIFF, and then kicked off. So last year, TIFF got really pissed off at Telluride. So TIFF schedules what they call world premieres. So they want to world premiere a movie. TIFF was supposed to world premiere 12 Years a Slave. Telluride does this thing that they called sneak peeks. So 12 Years a Slave was not part of Telluride's official lineup, but it was a sneak preview movie. So technically, 12 Years a Slave had its world premiere at Telluride. So the TIFF people got angry at that. So now the TIFF people have instituted a new policy that says that if your film is playing at Telluride before it plays at TIFF, TIFF will not play your film until Monday. So TIFF starts on a Thursday, and most of the press are in town to cover movies that first weekend. And so people are seeing this as, you know, I don't know, it's a turf war battle. To me, it's meaningless, and it's better for me because it spreads the film festival out. So movies this year that are screening at Telluride, like Rosewater and Wild, there's a handful of others, those movies will start, like, they'll have the TIFF premieres on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday we'll have another batch of really good movies. Like Matt said at the beginning of the podcast, TIFF is really front-loaded in the past, and so they have all the big movies on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the next Monday through Friday is very scarce. So hopefully that doesn't happen this year. But it's caused some ruckus and people saying that it's hurting the films, this whole turf war thing and the new rule from Toronto. So it'll be interesting to see how that rule affects the awards race this year. I'm not sure it will. It could, but, you know, I feel like movies that are... It seems to me that most of the filmmakers are siding with, they would rather have their film play at Telluride and then skip TIFF. Like last year, Telluride had Inside Llewyn Davis and Nebraska.
Although both of those,
both played at Cannes. Yeah, but they both played at Telluride and skipped TIFF altogether.
Which still was a gut punch. I still wanted both of those to be there. And New York Film Festival, that's the other thing. New York Film Festival swooped in and got those.
Yeah, and New York Film Festival is bulking up its status as well this year, nabbing for its three centerpiece films, Birdman, Gone Girl, and Inherent Vice, which are huge. And it's got the world premieres of Gone Girl and Inherent Vice. I think Birdman will probably show up at Telluride.
Right. And the thing about Telluride is, like you're saying, it's such a small film festival that New York Film Festival might as well be its world premiere. Like, it's so... Telluride is so industry.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't say... Well, we're talking about $750 badges. To me, it's like you just said. It starts the fuse. To me, it's like you're lighting the fuse somewhere. But again, it's so small that, yeah, it can start building buzz, but it doesn't explode until it gets to a bigger film festival. So Birdman, well, I think, yeah, it might start building buzz at Telluride, but I think it's preview night versus the premiere.
I guess so. I don't really think so. I think a film is fine if it screens at Telluride and then skips TIFF altogether. I think.
Oh, I still think it's fine. I mean, Brokeback Mountain did that.
Brokeback Mountain screened at Telluride and didn't screen at TIFF, and it didn't really need the TIFF bounce to get it.
Again, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm just talking about in terms of widespread recognition.
Sure.
New York Film Festival is functioning in the same capacity as TIFF. Like,
yeah,
that's
I would
where
agree
things
with
that. Are. Like her, I mean, her didn't screen at Telluride though. So, but it's that kind of notion of, I think New York Film Festival is starting to raise its pedigree in a sense of it can provide a boost that TIFF was previously doing. And I think it still shakes out. You know, Lincoln premiered at New York Film Festival in a mostly appeared. It wasn't a finished cut. It was a mostly finished cut. And Hugo did the same thing. It's still a launching pad. It's not that TIFF is going to die anytime soon, but New York Film Festival is certainly growing in its power,
yeah,
if you will.
For sure.
So, and that's where it kind of goes. And then it just starts snowballing because there are so many film festivals in the fall beyond these major ones.
Yeah, so it's just about the Telluride, the 1-2 punch of Telluride Toronto is really the what sets off this whole awards campaign. So by the second week of September, you will have kind of your early contenders list. We'll have kind of the front runners and stuff. Obviously, there'll be unknowns like Gone Girl and Inherent Vice and I'm not sure what. Oh, Unbroken, which is skipping the film festival circuit, as is Fury. So those are kind of question marks, but you will have some serious contenders to deal with by the second week of September.
So let me ask you this: if it is so crucial for movies to play at TIFF, if they are gunning for Oscars, why skip the festivals? Now, in the case of Wolf of Wall Street, like you were saying, they were just really just working on that as long as they could. I don't think that cut was finished until November. They just pushed it to the wire. So that was, like, just finished by necessity.
Sure.
But Fury, I assume, is finished. I'm not hearing anything, or at least I would assume it'd be finished enough to...
Yeah, Fury is finished. I've read that Fury might not be a film festival-type movie. It might not even be an awards movie. So,
sure.
To me, it feels like...
Unbroken looks like a goddamn awards movie.
Yeah, and Unbroken feels like... And that's Universal. I don't know if Universal has really been to TIFF before. I can't think of any Universal films that...
Well, Universal wasn't in the awards game for a while.
Yeah,
Universal,
so I'm not
just
sure...
didn't care.
So I think that's one reason that Unbroken isn't doing the film festival circuit. I think the other one, like you said, it doesn't need it. Unbroken is fine. It is. Its trailer is its awards campaign. That movie.
We're already in the game, motherfuckers.
Yeah, it doesn't really need anything else. We'll see it, and it'll be good or it'll be bad, and I think that'll be that.
Right. And then, of course, then... You know, you get to your festivals, and then you start filtering through your critics groups, and they get all the screeners and so on.
I think the biggest question mark for me is Tim Burton's Big Eyes, which is a Weinstein Company movie, which, you know, the Weinsteins are all about getting into the awards race. Last year, they just threw Philomena into TIFF last minute, not thinking it was anything. They thought Mandela was their big awards movie, and Philomena ended up being the one that got
the... Who had August Osage County?
They had August Osage County as well. I think Philomena was just like an afterthought for Weinstein Company, and they were like, oh shit, this one hit, so I guess that's an awards movie.
Yeah, they had no idea. That's kind of amusing, because they thought they had ammunition. And
yeah, so either Big Eyes isn't finished, or it's not good.
I hope it's good.
Yeah,
I
do
really
too.
Like
I do. I think it's definitely
real
weird
movie.
That it's not on the festival circuit. I think that's curious.
For me, though, what I might say is that it may just not be that festival film. It just might be a little too weird,
sure,
as Tim Burton is. So
yeah, maybe it's not an awards movie. Who knows?
Yeah, which again is fine. Look, that's the thing. We should be very clear. Just because something is an awards movie, that doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah,
it's a good indicator. Like, I love 12 Years a Slave and Gravity, and that's all well and good. But just because a movie isn't in the awards race and you opened in December, God forbid, you know, whatever. So. The thing about these Oscar campaigns is that they're being used for, yes, it's pedigree, yes, Hollywood is patting itself on the back, but it's financial. They see these as investments. It's leverage. You put money, you pump money into these awards campaigns, and you hope that what you'll get out is a large gross at the box offices. People are like, oh, I need to see Gravity, which had its own reasons. 12 Years a Slave was a tough one to get people in the theater.
Yeah.
And you almost
something
had
like American Hustle. It's like, oh, that's an Oscar movie. I have to see
right,
it.
But that skipped. American Hustle skipped.
Yeah, it wasn't finished.
It wasn't finished, but that was fun.
It also wasn't very good. But
that was also fun. Yeah, when I say it's fun, I thought it was fun in the way it played
it's
out.
Fine. It's a fine movie.
Yeah, when I say things are fun, I just think it's fun in the sense, like, David O. Russell, I kind of wish would go back to making weirder films.
I was about to say, I miss David O. Russell.
Yeah,
I miss the real David O. Russell.
Yeah, I like The Fighter. I like Silver Linings Playbook. American Hustle was... And then I could start to get sour as, like, his films kind of start to get their profile raised and you see them as a spoiler in the awards race. It's an unfair backlash.
They just feel so safe. Silver Linings
they
Playbook
are incredibly
is a
safe.
Silver Linings Playbook is a romantic comedy. It's a fine romantic comedy, but it's not an Oscar movie.
Yeah, and they're both based, and that and The Fighter are both based around competitions, which is a very easy climax. Will he ever make something like I Heart Huckabees again? I hope so.
I doubt it, because he's said in those interviews, he's like, you know, I Heart Huckabees wasn't very good, but I realized after that, on The Fighter, I realized what I should be doing.
Yeah, that's a goddamn shame.
Yeah.
So, let that be a lesson to you kids. I don't know. It's one of those things, this is probably a podcast for a different time, where filmmakers, they find success doing this one thing, and you just kind of wish they would harken back to something earlier that they would. For instance, I don't know if Christopher Nolan will ever make a film as small as Memento again.
Oh, no. I doubt it. Unless he has one big bomb, which I doubt will happen.
Right, exactly. So, but, I mean, he could make that film if he wanted to.
Sure.
And one of the things I like about David Fincher is he could have kept making, like, big, opulent Benjamin Button movies, which got, like, a ton of awards nominations and a ton of cred. And he's like, you know, I'm now going to make a much, much smaller film about Facebook. And now, like, Gone Girl just looks like, what is that film even going to be? Like, we have our suspicions, but it's still kind of an unknown.
Sure.
Like, there are small words. Like, when we talk about these unknowns, you have to be really tuned in to hear anyone that's heard anything. Like, you were saying you had heard about Inherent Vice, like, something crazy about it. I don't want to misquote you, but someone saw it, and their reaction was entirely unexpected.
It was the director of the New York Film Festival. He has some quotes about Gone Girl and Inherent Vice. I have heard Inherent Vice is not really an Oscar movie.
Yeah. Which, yeah, didn't you say compare it to, like, a Zucker Brothers movie?
Oh,
like,
yeah, no. Yeah, I did. Granted, this is an early reaction from someone I don't know, but said it had parts of it are like a Zucker Brothers movie, like a Zucker Brothers comedy, like zany comedy, and then it's got, like, psychedelia in it and hints of, like, the master's looseness. So who the hell knows what that's going to be?
It'll be a Paul Thomas Anderson film, yeah. Kids. And then Gone Girl, we just have our suspicions that it'll be absolutely fucking brutal.
Yes.
Huzzah. Having read the book, which is brutal in its own way, and then combine that with Fincher, and you can see from the trailers how dark it is already. It's that Fincher cinematography of just so much black in the screen, just light hunting to survive, and then when it is on screen, it's harsh and whatever. But it's so exciting, and it's one of those things where I wish it was playing at TIFF, because the thing about New York Film Festival is that people should know is it is so spread out. It plays over weeks and weeks, and there's like one film a day, like one or two films per day that you go see. And it's something where I understand it. I don't want them to change, or like, you should change for me personally, but I just think that's interesting because most film festivals like Sundance, like TIFF, like South by Southwest are very compact. Like, see as many movies as you can in a short amount of time, and that's how they work.
Sure.
Yeah. Indeed. All right.
Yes. There's no reason to complain, though. We've got some good stuff at TIFF this year.
Oh, I'm not complaining at all. Look, if anything, it's something where prepare for the mad dash, and I think you just opened up a good segue to talk about what are we excited to see at TIFF. Adam, you start.
Foxcatcher, obviously.
That's the one that comes off the top of my head every time.
Yeah, Foxcatcher. I'm very curious about Jason Reitman's Men, Women, and Children.
Especially after seeing that teaser.
After seeing the teaser, and also because it's a world premiere there, I'm very interested to see that one.
Well, the Reitmans are involved with the TIFF Bell Lightbox. They're a huge sponsor of that film.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if their films ever premiered anywhere else.
Oh, they have. Up in the Air premiered at Telluride. Oh, and
wow, what a fuck you to... No, I'm just kidding. I'm not surprised, though, that Reitman is premiered, because he also premiered Labor Day.
Yeah, he always screens at TIFF. Also very high on my list is Rosewater, Jon Stewart's movie.
Yep.
I'm curious about 99 Homes, just because it's the first non-Spider-Man Andrew Garfield role since The Social Network, and I think he's a great actor, and I would like to see him in different movies. So, but he's been doing.
He doesn't
plays.
Put it's on not, a costume and is in shitty stories.
Yeah, it's not like he disappeared. He went and did Broadway. He was on stage for all of that time.
Yeah, that's something we just important to remember. Like, a friend asked me the other day, it's like, where's Daniel Craig? I'm like, Daniel Craig does Broadway.
Yeah.
He does plays.
I'm also curious about Noah Baumbach's new movie, While We're Young. I'm not necessarily a huge Noah Baumbach fan, but I'm interested in that one. And then I forgot that Andrew Niccol had a new movie, Good Kill, with Ethan Hawke. And so I'm interested to see that.
I love that. Did you ever see The Host?
No.
No. Andrew Niccol, he is a weird one to be in there. And I guess I'm almost curious that he is participating, because his films have, I would say, other than, like, The Truman Show and Gattaca, like, I can see those being more on the festival side, but I don't really even know that much about Good Kill, which is exciting. That's one of the things I like to know as little as possible about these movies going into festivals. I feel like that's a rare opportunity. Like, the fact that I got to see The Babadook knowing nothing about it, and it fucking scared the shit out of me. I was not prepared. Like, now, TIFF, again, there's more pedigree. You're probably going to know at least one actor. But then again, I remember a couple TIFFs ago, and it's a film that I've never seen anywhere else, is a film called Ghost Graduation, which is like The Sixth Sense meets The Breakfast Club, and it's a foreign film. And I want people to go see it, but it's hard to find those movies. It's harder to find those movies at TIFF, unlike Sundance, where you pretty much, like you were saying, everything is a lot of things are a wild card.
Yeah, yeah. What are you looking forward to at TIFF this year?
I am looking forward to the films you just named, and I'm also looking forward to Oren Moverman has a new film this year. Oren Moverman directed Rampart and The Messenger, and so I'm very excited to see what he's bringing this year. There are a couple documentaries that I'm looking to see. The Look of Silence, which is Joshua Oppenheimer's sequel, if you will, to The Act of Killing. Whereas The Act of Killing was from the perspective of the executioners, The Look of Silence is from the perspective of the victims. And so they're companion pieces, and Act of Killing was my favorite film of last year. So I'm very excited to see that. I'm also very excited to see Electric Boogaloo, which is from the... It's another documentary. It's from the people who made Not Quite Hollywood and Machete Maidens Unleashed. Both of those films are about exploitation movies and how they were made. And this is... Electric Boogaloo is about Canon Films. And Canon Films is sort of the American exploitation genre of action movies. But also weird dance movies, like the title comes after... from Break Into Electric Boogaloo, which is a dance movie. But it's also, they were the guys who did Cobra and Over the Top, which is where these Stallone movies. They did the American Ninja films, just these sort of low budget 80s action movies that have this insane charm. The guys who ran it, Golem and Globus, I think I just butchered their names, they were these Israeli businessmen. And they were colorful characters in their own right. And I'm just curious to see, like, what is this movie going to cover? Because there's so much it could go into. These guys owned the rights to Superman at one point. They made Superman for The Quest for Peace, which is awful. And to me, it's just fascinating. I'm very, very excited to see that documentary. And from there I'm also excited to see Maggie, which is an Arnold Schwarzenegger film that almost seems like a drama, but with horror elements. The plot of the film is that his daughter, who's played by Abigail Breslin, is slowly turning into a zombie, and he's trying to take care of her, and it just looks so weird, but almost touching. But then, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I think that looks... I have no idea what to expect from that film, and that's
well,
the kind of stuff...
Well, his track record's been pretty stellar since he came back, so...
I know, right?
Got high hopes for it.
I think so. I would say... Well, you know what? You say that, though, and yet... I think he's still kind of giving interesting performances. Like, Escape Plan is not a good film, but he's good in it. So I would say that he's kind of interesting, entering a phase in his career where he's not choosing great projects, but I don't think he's become boring. So sure. I think that's something important to note. In any case, just from the premise alone, I'm going to go see it. I think that's just an interesting premise. But when you throw in Schwarzenegger, you've amplified it.
There you go.
So there's that. And it's fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger at the film festival. Come on. So there's that. And then there are movies that I can... They're definitely like awards, ones that are gunning for awards. And then I start becoming a little wary of them, but still moderately curious. Like, I'm definitely going to make time to see The Imitation Game,
yeah,
which I think has a really cool premise. It's, for those who don't know, it's about Alan Turing, who helped crack the Nazis' code during World War II, but he was a closet homosexual, and then when he was discovered that he was gay, he was convicted of it. It was a crime in England at the time. And so it's a kind of a fascinating story. Yet stars Benedict Cumberbatch.
He was essentially single-handedly responsible for winning World War II.
And yeah, he was kind
it's
of
a very little-known story. I'm very curious to see that one.
Exactly. But then there's stuff that, like, The Theory of Everything.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. I like Eddie Redmayne, but it seems like it could be very much like awards.
It looks
give us Oscars.
It looks so awardsy. That's my thing about it is that. I'm not going to these films like, man, I hope they suck, but it's a little more cautious. And then again, an unexpected awards TIFF presence this year is Adam Sandler, who's not only in Men, Women, Children, but also Tom McCarthy's The Cobbler.
Yeah,
I think Tom McCarthy's last three films have been great. He did Station Agent, The Visitor, and Win Win, and to me, that's just hitting them all out of the park. And so I'm really excited about The Cobbler. So there's that. I think Midnight Madness is a little weak this year, to be perfectly honest. I think Electric Boogaloo is sort of its standout. And then from there, it's a matter of, like, I know that there will be films that get buzz that I just aren't on my radar right now. Like, I'll have heard of them, but I won't know what they are. I'm also curious about the films that you think would be good, and then they tank. Like, last year there was You Are Here, which is now Are You Here? Huge title change. Mm-hmm. Like, people were... We had a scheduling conflict, but when we heard about it, because it was, like, Matthew Weiner's first film, and with Zach Galifianakis, Amy Poehler, Owen Wilson, all right, good cast, and apparently there were just walkouts galore for that movie. And...
Blood Ties. Then, we saw Blood Ties just because there was nothing else to see, and it was stupid. And I saw Third Person and last year.
I was about to bring up Third Person. I was about to bring up Third Person.
So bad. And that's the thing about it. It's kind of a... It's a hodgepodge. This year, it's not as much. I've made kind of a tentative schedule, and there's nothing... Like, last year, I threw a couple films in there that I wasn't sure about, like, that I didn't really know anything about. I saw... the adaptation of Therese Rackin, I forgot what it was retitled, with Elizabeth Olsen, and I knew nothing about that, but I was just curious. It wasn't very good. But this year there aren't many like that. I'm interested in The Riot Club, directed by Lone Scherfig, who did An Education. I think that sounds interesting. And then Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson movie with Paul Dano. But other than that, there's not a lot that are, like, big question marks. There's a lot of them that I'm kind of like, oh, I kind of had to have a handle on what this might be.
Well, for me, and I think, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but there are certain job requirements. So for me, when I was building my schedule, my tentative schedule, I noticed, and this one sort of kicks me in the gut, is I have to go see The Judge because it's a big movie, but it conflicts with Mr. Turner, which... got such good notices out of Cannes, and I'd rather go see Mr. Turner.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
But you got to see the awards bait from Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall, and I'm not, like, trying to write off The Judge. I hope it's good, but there's a film I want to see more, and that's
well, and it's
the
also
issue.
The thing and of, like, The Judge is a Warner Brothers movie that will be in wide release, you know, at this date.
A few weeks
later.
Yeah,
but then Mr. Turner, like, I'm not sure when that's coming to where I am or what kind of release it will get or whatever, so.
Exactly. And so there's that issue with it. And then there are films where I'm just like The Equalizer, and like, okay, whatever. Like, I'm just not going to... I'll see it when it comes to theaters. You're kind of in TIFF, and it almost feels like you're there. It's there, so I assume that it's going to be doing press there.
Well, like, and it's also kind of your if you go and see The Equalizer, that's taking up, like, precious free time you have to see, like, X number of other movies around that time. Like, there's only so many movies you can see a day, and, like, so many ways you can rearrange your schedule. So it's kind of, it's a toss-up. It's like, do I want to see this, or do I want to see this? Like, what is the likelihood of me seeing this after TIFF pretty soon or whatever? So
right. So for me, oh, and a film I forgot to mention, a couple films, Maps to the Stars. You got to see David Cronenberg when you can. I know it's going to be weird, and I don't even know what the Cannes reaction was like, but I don't care. It could have been,
it was,
unless it had been
booze everywhere.
It was booze. Oh man, well, I'll still go see it. Well, that's the thing. Like, his films, like, sometimes get rejected, and maybe that's the case, but whatever. I'm okay being in the minority.
The Cannes reaction is so weird, though. You never know. Like, there's, like, the Tree of
Life. Fahrenheit 9/11 won, and it got, like, a standing ovation, because France. Yeah. It's really, I don't know how else to put it. But also, I'm looking forward to, like, there are these films where it's, like, the filmmaker conflicts with the premise. Like, so, for instance, like, Pawn Sacrifice seems really cool. You know, it's about Bobby Fischer, and it stars Tobey Maguire, Peter Sarsgaard, Liev Schreiber, but the filmmaker is Edward Zwick. Now, I like Courage Under Fire and Glory, but those were a while ago, and since it's, like, Last Samurai, Love and Other Drugs, Blood Diamond, and so now we're at that thing where it's like, does he have another good one in him? So I'm cautious about that. Same goes with The Judge, which is, like, David Dobkin's first drama. And then even This Is Where I Leave You, which has an amazing cast, but it's Sean Levy. And Adam, I know you said the book is really good.
It's not really good. The book Levy. Is fine. But that cast is amazing.
Okay. It is an amazing cast, but there are so many films with amazing casts.
I know.
That you put together. And even that, like, hell, like, the Way, Way Back had an amazing cast. And when people were doing it, that standing ovation at Sundance, I was so confused. I
didn't understand.
Like, why are people loving this?
This will be the breakout movie of the year.
I mean, it actually did pretty well. I mean, but it wasn't... I'd never give it a standing ovation. But another film I am just straight up looking forward to is Nightcrawler, which looks... like, Jake Gyllenhaal looks to be given a really good performance in that. Like, already from the trailer, I am sold. That's the thing. You do have these trailers that help push you in the right direction. Or not the right direction, but it makes things tantalizing, and quite honestly, you're trying to put together a schedule, and there are so many hours in the day and films you can see, and fuck it. If I like the Nightcrawlers trailer, I'll find time for it. So, I don't know if you're the same way, Adam, but...
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Nightcrawler is one of those that's on my list.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is...
But who knows? They could change the schedule, something else can happen.
They could change the schedule, and then... Well, not only can they change the schedule, but what I was about to say is, what if a film that we had underestimated or written off or whatever that isn't on our schedule then gets all this buzz? Then we have to, like, fuck, where are we going to find time?
Well, it's hard to do that at TIFF because there are so few screenings and they're usually close to each other. So it's, like, it's a lot harder to gauge buzz at TIFF because this movie got big buzz, but all of its screenings were yesterday.
It's not screening again.
So you're out of luck.
Yeah, that's
But I am
going to
be paying attention.
Well, you're either out of luck
to kind of adjust my schedule accordingly, because I know Wild will be there with Reese Witherspoon from the director of Dallas Buyers Club. Rosewater will be there. Let's see. The Theory of Everything, I think. Oh, maybe no. No, not Theory of Everything. Maybe The Imitation. I think The Imitation Game will be there. Gosh, what else? I think those are the big ones that are going to be at Telluride. That will also be at TIFF. So,
right. So, Wild, I would definitely keep. Like, I'll keep an eye on it because right now it's something where I actually do have a conflict with Wild, and there's something I want to go see elsewhere. I don't have my schedule in front of me. But things can change anyway. And you just kind of got to feel it out. And then, like Adam said, there's only so many films you can see in a day. I review every movie I see. And this year I've sworn I'm not staying up till 2 in the morning to write reviews because it's not going to happen. I was sick all last year at TIFF. Adam can attest to that.
Yes.
And it's not fun. Yeah. So, but I am excited. Adam and I were at Comic-Con, which, yeah, you heard the podcast. We were tepid at best. But what keeps us going is, like, TIFF is so soon. Like, I'm excited for it. Adam, you're excited for it. Like, because you get to see so many good movies a day. And then sometimes you see third person.
Yeah, sometimes you see third person. But then sometimes we had one day last year that was just full of nice movies. Like, we saw The F Word, which is now titled What If, and Enough Said. And it was like after we had seen, like, it was like a day after we had seen, like, 12 Years, of, or I had a day where I saw, like, 12 Years a Slave, and...
Yeah, I saw that with you.
I saw 12 Years a Slave before you.
No, we saw it together.
I had to take a subway across town to go to a theater in downtown Toronto to see 12 Years a Slave.
Never mind, then. You were with me in spirit, Adam. That's where you were.
Yeah. You saw it after I was like, Goldberg's going to be the one that hates 12 Years a Slave.
You fucking asshole. I didn't hate
I know, but
years
you were
slave.
Like the only one who hadn't seen it. And you were like, I'm seeing it Tuesday. And we're like, you're going to be the one that hates it. You're going to be the first negative review.
Fuck you guys. Treated me like Armand White. Fuck
but
all
you
y'all.
You enjoyed it.
I did enjoy it. Enjoy not being the bright adjective, but I thought it was great. It was on my top 10 at the end of the year, but I am hoping that you mentioned the F word, and I hope there are films like that, films that are not heavy awards fare, but also like the F word. In fact, to me, falls into this wonderful zone of it's not a heavy movie, but it was unexpected, and I really enjoyed it. I hope there's a film like that, at least one of those films like that this year. But we'll see. I am excited. So we'll be at TIFF next week. So, Adam, do you want to go into recommendations?
Sure.
All right. What do you got?
I'm actually going to recommend the F Word, which is now called What If, because I saw it at TIFF last year. It was one of the big surprises. It's out now in theaters. It's not doing too well, so it might not be at your theater anymore. But it's a really good movie. It just briefly, Daniel Radcliffe stars as a young man who starts to develop a relationship with a girl played by Zoe Kazan who he has feelings for, but they decide to just be friends because she has a boyfriend. It's a very trite premise, a premise that's been well-worn territory, but it's directed by Michael Dowse, who directed Goon. And it's very funny. It's not at all trite. It has excellent supporting performances from Adam Driver and Mackenzie Davis. And it's good. It's really good. If you just want to have a good time, enjoy yourself. Great date movie, really fun. And I miss the romantic comedy genre. And this is a good romantic comedy. And I wish they would keep making movies like this because there are far too few of them. So if you can find What If playing near you or on VOD, I highly recommend you see it.
Yeah, it feels like a film that'll be on Netflix Instant. It feels like just that kind of movie. But I would say see it in movie theaters. Support that kind of film. Because, like Adam says, there aren't that many good romantic comedies out there. And I agree. I highly recommend it. My recommendation is Rampart, which I saw at TIFF 3 years ago. I'm recommending it because it's directed by Oren Moverman, who, like I said, has a new film at TIFF this year. It's not an easy film to recommend given current events, but the film is about Woody Harrelson plays a LA cop in the Rampart Division, and it takes place in about the mid-90s, I believe. But the larger point is that he plays a corrupt cop, and he is caught on tape beating a suspect, or a guy who just cuts him off in traffic, or accidentally T-bones his car. But he's just this brutal person, and he almost clings to it. He actually does say, like, this is a war zone. He refers to LA as an occupation, I believe. And what's fascinating about the film is that it's not trying to sympathize or, you know, he's actually a good guy deep down. He's actually someone who feels the need that he has to hold on to the monster inside of him because that's the only way that he can function and that the world needs him. It needs this bad person to operate properly. It's an amazing performance by Woody Harrelson. I feel that it now has a dubious distinction because it was promoted with a Reddit AMA with Woody Harrelson, and he didn't understand that he can answer any question. He kept steering it back to Rampart, but it's a phenomenal film. It's not an easy film. It's an even tougher film given the events of Ferguson and just the way police militarization has grown. But it is a thoughtful movie that doesn't have any easy answers, and I think even after you see it, you will keep thinking about it. So my recommendation is Rampart. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
Adam Chitwood.
Okay, so we will be off the next two Sundays, Labor Day, and then we'll be at TIFF, but we will be back afterwards to let you know what we thought about all these movies we mentioned. So thanks for listening, everyone.